Power Pack Morning Zoo. Are you kidding me?
Fire!
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Good morning and welcome.
Dan Mickley.
Oh my God, he's from Chicago. That's amazing.
Vince Marotta.
How are you, Vince? Who's better than Vince?
Sarah Cazell. And Jerry Carlin. It can only be
seven. Arizona Sports, the local sports league.
Mickley and Marotta mornings.
Shout out to Dan Mickley, my boy. Him and Vince. Okay.
Good morning, Valley sports fans. Let's begin Thursday with a question. If today is a national sporting holiday, which it most assuredly is, what are we doing working?
Right?
It's a national holiday. We should be off.
We should be off tomorrow.
Today is the celebration of Utah's new NHL franchise.
Yeah, do you think they canceled school in Salt Lake City today? For the unnamed hockey team?
I heard a lot of people yesterday when you saw stuff come out about Andre Turigny just feeling so loved and really like, you know, having an owner like, oh, wow, I really like this guy. I can trust this guy. I saw people react like, oh, that's not fair. Don't put that out there. Look, people, this should hurt. This is supposed to hurt.
I thought I was happy in Arizona, but
it's all a bunch of crap.
Screw them now, is what I
right
say.
Is.
Salt Lake City, very pretty.
The players, the coaches, everybody that was there, they should be happy. That's good.
That was somewhere between Andre Turigny and Karl Marx, what you just did.
Well,
not Richard Marx, Karl Marx.
How about Groucho Marx?
I'm sorry, Vinny. Please say what you're going to say.
I forgot. It should hurt. You were saying that
something
like
about the players being happy.
The players should be happy by being in a better situation.
I think about what the fans here are going through. You ever heard the song Happier by Ed Sheeran?
Yes. Mm.
It's all about he runs into a woman that he used to be with a month ago and how much happier she looks. That's a week ago.
Yeah, it's a week ago.
It was a week ago.
It's a week ago. Yeah, I know.
It's just really a week. It's been apart. Yeah. You look happier, don't you?
Yeah, they do. It's a national holiday, not because of what's going on in Salt Lake City. What is going on in the D, Detroit, the NFL draft?
If they're not going to make Super Bowl Monday a national holiday, we're never getting this as a national
holiday. No, I know. You're right about that.
Come on.
We
come
need
on,
like
lawmakers.
What's more overrated, today or the Super Bowl?
Super Bowl's more overrated.
Yeah, today's not so much overrated. The next couple of days are.
All right. So, obviously, today, what happens today, we won't know the impact of for at least next year or years from now.
Yes.
But at least today, all the teams are involved in it. I don't know that that's true, actually. I don't know that every team has a first-round pick today. But you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's not just two teams that truly fan bases care about
Think of it this way, though. The NFL draft on the calendar, any sporting event on the calendar, is by far and away, it's not even close, the most talked-about sporting event on the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Does it live up to that? No, it doesn't. By the way, tune into our NFL draft special today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be a part of it.
Extravaganza. All of us.
Today's a long day for all of us. All right, start the show. Jab it.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world.
The Splash. Splash. Cannonball.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
NFL Draft Day is here. The festivities get underway in Detroit at 5 o'clock Arizona time with the Chicago Bears on the clock, followed by the Washington Commanders, New England Patriots, and the Arizona Cardinals, who currently own the 4th overall pick. Cardinals also right now in possession of the 27th pick of the first round, one they acquired from the Houston Texans on draft night a year ago. General manager Monty Austenfort, his staff, and the war room will be busy as they currently have 6 of the first 90 selections in this weekend's draft. Not only will we have coverage all day, be sure to join us for Arizona Sports 2024 NFL Draft Special starting at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock live from the BetMGM Sportsbook at State Farm Stadium in Glendale. We'll be out amongst the masses.
Yeah.
And speaking of masses, yeah, it's all hands on deck today here
at
Arizona
Sports.
Everybody
involved.
Yes, it is. The Detroit Lions, before draft day, extended the contracts of two of their star players on Wednesday. They give Amon-Ra St. Brown, their wide receiver, a 4-year extension worth $120 million, and Penei Sewell, 4-year, $112 million deal. St. Brown's deal includes $77 million guaranteed, which, for the time being, is the most for any receiver in the NFL.
For the time being.
He had 119 catches for 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns for the Lions, who made it all the way to the NFC Championship game. Elsewhere, not a surprise, but the Cincinnati Bengals picked up the fifth-year option on 2025 on wide receiver Jamar Chase's contract, an option that will pay him $21.8 million. He's in line for a new contract. He's going to be the guy that breaks St. Brown's guaranteed money mark. The Steelers will not do the same with the contract of recently acquired quarterback Justin Fields, by the way. No surprise there either. The D-backs' perplexing offensive showing continues in a 5-1 loss to the Cardinals at Busch Stadium. Perplexing in that they scored 14 runs on 15 hits on Tuesday night and followed it up with a flat 1-run on 6-hit performance on Wednesday. D-backs led 1-0 from the first inning through the fifth, but the Cardinals got 2 in the sixth, 1 in the seventh, 2 more in the eighth to win the game, and they take 2 of 3 in the series. Jordan Montgomery pitched well. He went 7 innings, allowed 2 earned runs on 6 hits, but unlike his first start in San Francisco, didn't get any run support. Off day today, D-backs road trip continues tomorrow night in Seattle against the Mariners with Zach Gallen scheduled to pitch the opener against George Kirby. Suns ramping up for Game 3 of their first-round Western Conference playoff series against the Minnesota Timberwolves tomorrow night and trying to get into the win column after dropping the first two games in Minneapolis. Lots of Suns consternation, both locally and nationally.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, last night in the NBA, only two playoff games on the slate. The Miami Heat started off the night with a big Game 2 upset of the Boston Celtics, 111-101 at TD Garden. The Heat hit a playoff franchise record, 23 three-pointers. Tyler Hero, Caleb Martin, Bam Adebayo combined for 66 points in the win. That series is knotted up at 1-1 going to South Beach. Oklahoma City routed New Orleans 124-92 in Game 2 of their series at Paycom Center. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 33. Chet Holmgren 26 for OKC. They are up 2-0. Three games in the NBA playoffs tonight. Game 3 in Orlando. Magic hosting Cleveland down 0-2. I'd like to give a shout-out to the television executives who decided to put this whole series on NBA TV because it's been a complete crap.
Complete crap.
That tip is at 4 o'clock. 4:30, it's Knicks 76ers Game 3 in Philly on TNT. The Knicks shooting for a 3-0 series lead there. And the nightcap in L.A. with the Lakers hosting Denver at 7 o'clock on TNT. The Nuggets hold a 2-0 series lead in that series. Naz Reid of the Timberwolves named the sixth man of the year. He wins the John Havlicek Trophy. They gave all the trophies names now. Isn't that nice?
Wow.
I'm surprised he won it, quite honestly. He's a good player. In a very close vote, Malik Monk of Sacramento got second.
Yeah.
I thought he would have won it.
How about Havlicek? How about Havlicek?
Well, you got your wish there, Mad Dog. The now former Arizona Coyotes hockey team members were all in Utah for a welcome event at Delta Center in Salt Lake City on Wednesday. Team owners Ryan and Ashley Smith hosted the event for a packed arena. The unnamed team will play its home games there starting in the fall after a whirlwind move from Arizona that was completed last week. Ryan Smith got all dressed up, by the way, which for him means he took off his backwards hat. But he still had a t-shirt on. The franchise also released the 8 finalists for the name of the team. The options include the always glitzy Utah Hockey Club. And honestly, that's one of the best options on the table.
Oh, no.
Did you see this list of names?
Run it by me.
Yetis.
I like Yetis.
Mammoth. Blizzard. Ice. Really. Let's name the team Ice. Woo!
The Mammoth and the Yeti are not bad, though. They're sort of unique. I like anything that's
covered
in hair.
Yeah. Of course you do. Yeah.
They're going to name the team the Jarretts.
Hey, let's be, creativity is not their strong point. Their college team are the Utah Utes.
ASU President Michael Crow was reportedly ready to present Graham Rossini to the Arizona Board of Regents as his choice to be the school's athletic director. But according to Chris Cartman of SunDevilSource.com, there is pushback from donors on the choice due to the fact that Rossini is an internal choice. Considering all the athletic department strife, Rossini has been serving as the executive senior athletic director and chief business officer since September. So Graham Rossini is basically front office speak for June Jones in ASU vocabulary.
It's internal.
And there's a lot of backlash to the Herm Edwards show cause penalty and the $4.4 million he skated away with. Yeah, there's a lot of people not happy with Michael Crow.
Rightfully so. ASU Hoops losing a transfer, gaining another. Jemiah Neal now officially a member of Creighton. He's transferring there after averaging 11 points per game for the Sun Devils in his junior season. How about this? This is where we are in the transfer portal. ASU got a commitment from guard Austin Nunez, who is transferring from Ole Miss, who transferred to Ole Miss from ASU.
Oh, boy.
Now we got guys coming back to the school they started at.
That's unbelievable.
The Arizona Wildcats get the services of Oakland transfer Trey Townsend, a 6'6 forward who averaged 17 points and 8 rebounds per game for the Golden Grizzlies of Oakland, who upset Kentucky in the NCAA tournament.
You know what would be cool about a transfer portal? If you went into a transfer portal as an athlete and you saw a number that they were going to pay you, but you didn't know what school. Like renting a car from one of those discount services and you don't know the carrier until you book it. Make some mystery to the portal. Like the players know they're going to get that money, but they don't know where the roulette wheel is going to stop.
Oh, my God.
You're going to North Dakota State.
Exportial.com.
Right.
I'm getting a Mercedes and 50 grand.
Jared likes my goofy ideas. I can't believe he doesn't like this one.
I do like. Well, also, I was what if they made them sign like a 2-year contract? You had to stay at least 2 years if you transfer to a school. Unless you go to the NBA or the NFL. I don't know. It's too crazy right now.
Oh, I like Vic's idea
better. My idea's better. Go into the portal. You don't know where you're going to land. It's like a time tunnel.
It's like a blind date.
Exactly.
You get spit out at Bowling Green.
Exactly. Well, yeah. So you wanted to leave Tempe, huh?
Man, look at this car. It's right. Awesome, but I'm playing for Appalachian State.
Exactly.
No offense to the Mountaineers that might be listening.
Of course. Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
My God, West Virginia.
Oh, there's your splash for Thursday, April 25th. The NFL draft is here. Is Marvin Harrison Jr. gonna finally be a Cardinal tonight? We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Wolf. The NFL draft is here. So what's in store for Monty Ossenford and the Arizona Cardinals? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Well, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one guy. Is it as huge a gap at wide receiver position as maybe it is, like Brock Bowers is number one tight end, who's the number two? No, it's not that big. So there's a chasm there, okay? But at wide receiver, to me, it's still Marvin Harrison at one. Everyone's fighting it out over whether it's Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze at two or three. Which one goes two, which one goes three. I get it. And Brian Thomas Jr. seems to be the acknowledged four out of LSU. But there's so many guys.
That's Charles Davis from NFL Media and CBS. He joined us yesterday here on Bickley and Murata Mornings giving his opinion on the wide receiver position, which has been one of the most talked about positions in this year's class. And it all comes to a head tonight as the NFL draft gets underway in Detroit. 5 o'clock, Caleb Williams will be the first pick of the Chicago Bears.
It
looks like, to me, Bick, with the quotes coming out and what Jaden Daniels said yesterday, it's kind of crystallizing a little bit that I think Washington's going to take Jaden Daniels at number two. You feel that way?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it does kind of feel that way. It feels like it feels like Jaden has ascended to that spot, and it feels like even though there was a media uprising or whatever, however you want to call an awareness that he and Antonio Pierce really are fond of each other, I just don't see the Raiders getting to a point where they can get him and you know, It's a good landing spot for Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, and if the Washington Commanders are that much in love with Jaden Daniels, too, why would it benefit them to trade out of that spot?
Right, exactly.
Get your guy.
That's exactly right.
Number three is where it gets interesting still.
Now, can we pause real quick, yeah, though, about this number two? Because we have not talked about the Topgolf trip. What do you think about the Commanders taking en masse potential draft picks on a golf excursion? Do you think it's genius? Do you think it's cheeseball?
I think there's psychology behind it, definitely, mm-hmm, from the Commander standpoint. And let's not forget, they completely reworked their front office.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in some people from outside the football world.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing some different things, and I know the reaction from some of the guys on that at that event.
Uh-huh.
Like, what is this? Because it wasn't your normal in-person top 30 visit. I think they just wanted to see them as people. I think they wanted to see them in a semi-competitive environment.
I kind of like it. Yeah, I kind of like it too. Because if we've learned anything,
who doesn't love Topgolf?
Well, exactly, totally. Because in the case of this, you're talking about an era now where teams have their BS meter dialed up all the way with these kids, because these kids get all the training in the world. And even Jaden Daniels said, this is the first trip that I had to make where I didn't have to remember plays. I didn't have to remember on what is the right thing to say. And so if that's all you're getting from these interviews anyways, why not try something like that? The Commanders were getting a lot of flack for doing that. So sort of the way that Jonathan Gannon and Monty Austinfort were getting a lot of flack for going to Norman, Oklahoma for a statue. You do anything outside the box in the NFL, and the old school just goes nuts.
Well, the old school was made up of one guy on that front. And it's not even old school. It's the right. I hate the Arizona Cardinals school.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, that's right.
Florio
University.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Mm.
And look, for teams thinking outside the box, why not?
Yeah, no, I
try.
Same. Okay.
So, all right.
So then we get
number
to three.
The New England Patriots. There seems to be more confidence this morning that the Patriots have their guy at number three, and it's going to be Drake May, the quarterback out of North Carolina. I'm not so sure. If there is an organization not to be trusted,
mm-hmm,
it's the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
They could zig and change the whole complexion of the first round.
Listen, okay, so if you're the New England Patriots, and if Tom Brady is really not coming back, and there were reports over the week, and I'm sure you saw from people who think he's actually being serious, that he floated that trial balloon as a method to kind of say, no, really? Give me a call. Okay, so if we think that is nothing more than narcissistic noise, then how could the Patriots not take a quarterback? Because when are you going to get one? If next year's quarterback class is way worse, and you're going to wait to next year,
yeah,
you're just condemning yourself to what? The number one pick overall?
Yeah, and right now, so there's going to be guys that elevate next year, but it's not year's class is not thought to be as strong as this year's
right.
class.
Or unless they think, okay, the fifth best quarterback in this draft class is good enough for us, so we could trade back. Just like the same idea people are saying with the Cardinals. They could trade out of four and get like the third or fourth best wide receiver, and that's still good enough for them.
It's so weird, the dynamic, when you talk about teams missing quarterbacks. It is the worst draft strategy in the world to say we have to draft a position, especially at quarterback, because it's going to take you a top 10 pick. The 49ers are the most recent example of this. If you go in saying we got to get one, regardless of who it is, we just got to get one.
Yeah.
It's a bad strategy.
It is. It's a bad strategy for shopping for anything in life.
Yeah.
That brings us to number four. There was a little nugget in Matt Miller from ESPN's latest mock draft yesterday that had the Cardinals taking Marvin Harrison Jr. at four. He wrote, Harrison met with two teams for 30 visits in this lead up to the draft, the Bears and the Cardinals. That's it. Sources around the NFL say Harrison has an assurance from the Cardinals that he will be the pick if available at this spot.
Hmm.
Well, will he be available? It all hinges on, well, not only the New England Patriots, but now there's people thinking the Giants are going to try to move up to get their quarterback.
Isn't that a poorly worded tweet, though? Because if he's available and the Cardinals get an offer to trade down they can't refuse, aren't they breaking their promise to Marvin Harrison Jr.? If you're telling them we'll take you if you're there.
Unless they're steadfast in the fact that if he's available, we're not trading down at all.
Maybe.
Because Monty Austinfort did say, hey, nothing's going to happen until we're on the clock.
Okay, I find that reassuring that's the guy that they've locked in on, but if
you're
true.
You're right, though. Does that mean that if he's there, they're going to take him, or it just means they're not going to take anyone else there? But they could still trade.
That's what I think it was meant to be expressed.
Well, he has an assurance from the Cardinals, right, that he will be the pick if available.
I know. And so either that's breaking news or a poorly worded tweet.
Or the Cardinals let out too much information.
Or the Cardinals let out or TMI. Yeah, it's one of the three.
Text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line. It's open at 620-620. Right now, we'll have a lot of draft talk today. Also, going to dip our foot into the D-backs pool. If you were wanting to hear a lot of highlights from the D-backs on today's edition of D-backs Daily, sorry, look elsewhere, but we're going to do it next.
Listen to yesterday's.
Yeah, exactly. We can archive that one for you. It's Pickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball.
D-backs Daily.
Yeah, that rubber game of a three-game series in St. Louis against the Cardinals for the D-backs. Final time these two teams will see each other in the regular season. Kyle Gibson on the mound for the Cards. Jordan Montgomery, who pitched in St. Louis for part of last year, countering for the D-backs. And the Snakes would give their new lefty a lead before he ever threw a pitch. Pavin Smith hitting leadoff. Blooped a single to left field over the head of Nolan Arenado. Blaze Alexander followed with a single to center. Gibson then hit Jock Peterson with a pitch to load the bases before some of the best fans in baseball found their seats at Busch Stadium. That would bring up Christian Walker.
A quick peek at second, and now Gibson throws. Walker swings and hits it deep to center. Going back, Ciani at the track and makes the catch in front of the wall. One run will score. Tagging towards third is Alexander, and it's 1-0 Diamondbacks on the sack fly by Walker.
They could not add more, though, as Eugenio Suarez hit into a 6-4-3 double play to end the first. Not a lot of fireworks for a while. Montgomery faced only one over the minimum in the first three innings of work. D-backs had a chance in the top of the fourth with runners on second and third with two out, but Kevin Newman struck out swinging after being up 3-0 in the count. The zeros would continue to be posted until the bottom of the sixth. Montgomery still on the mound with one out. Brendan Donovan single to center. That was followed by a Wilson Contreras double. That pushed Donovan to third base and brought up Nolan Arenado.
And Montgomery will throw. Arenado line drive, base hit left field. Contreras hustling towards third. He will stop there. But Arenado ties the game with an RBI single, and it's one aside in the sixth.
I'd have to look it up. I would say Nolan Arenado's got to be one of the leading RBI guys against the Diamondbacks all time, wouldn't you say?
Top five. Yeah definitely.
Tied up at one, St. Louis would take its first lead just two pitches later.
0-1 the count. Here comes. It's in the dirt, and it skips past Barnhart. Contreras will score. Arenado to second. The Cardinals take a 2-1 lead on the wild pitch.
Montgomery got out of the inning without further damage until the seventh, that is. With one out, Blaze Alexander's throwing error allowed Mason Wynn to reach base, and that brought up Nolan Gorman.
Runner goes. This one swung on line into left field. That's a base hit. This is trouble. Wynn rounding second on his way to third. He will be waved around and score. And that's a huge RBI for the Cardinals as they now take a 3-1 lead.
Yeah, they put Wynn in motion on that play.
Yeah.
Perfect hit and run, and that guy is really fast. He scored from first without a throw.
Yeah, that's fast.
Yeah, 3-1 at that point. D-backs got a leadoff single from Peterson leading off the eighth. He was immediately erased as Christian Walker hit into a double play. In the Cardinals' half of the eighth, they got more padding from certified snake killer Lars Nootbaar.
And here he is with the bases loaded. First pitch, high fly ball to right. Gritchick back. It's over his head. It's off the wall. One run will score. Goldschmidt rounding second. He will score. Holding it third is Pajes. And Nootbaar on the first pitch delivers a two-run double.
They got Nootbaar again. Trailing by four runs, the D-backs face St. Louis closer Ryan Helsley in the ninth. McCarthy led off with a single. Carroll struck out again. And then Ketel Marte pinch hit for Newman. And it produced a fitting ending.
Here's the 0-1, and Ketel swinging a ground ball right side. McCarthy hesitated. He'll be thrown out at second, throw to first in time, and that'll end the ball game. Diamondbacks want to hold to see if they want a challenge. They're going to call both out. Let's just pack it up and go home. Cardinals win it. Final score 5-1. Incredible.
Yeah, good idea, Chris Garagiola. Pack it up and go home. Did you see that last play?
Mm-hmm.
Can we ask the question, what the hell was Ketel Marte doing?
It's a good question.
He, first of all, ran at about 55% speed.
I was going to say about 60, but close enough.
He was looking at the ball almost to, like, ensure that it was going to beat him. And then he kind of held up even at the end.
Yeah, it was weird.
It was very,
very
strange.
Very weird. Very, very, very odd ending to what has been a very, very odd, ragged start to the season. What are they, 12-14 now? 12-15?
Yep.
12-14?
12-14.
Yeah, it's again, I think this is a hang on by your fingernails type of deal. Corbin Carroll's debut as a seventh hole hitter did not go very well.
No.
0-for-3, a couple more strikeouts, down to 2.08 on the season. It's and this
one
really,
ball in play.
Yesterday. Yeah, yeah. And this really shows you how deceiving statistics can be because of those three outlier games, the 16, the 17, the 14-run performance. This team has waited, and it looks like the best offensive team in baseball. In fact, it is, mm-hmm. statistically. But it's skewed, and it's weighted dramatically, overweighted by three individual performances. And you thought maybe the Diamondbacks were going to kind of keep this going a little bit. They loaded the bases in the first inning after scoring 14 the previous night. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, and they're 10 feet away. I mean, Christian Walker's sack fly went almost 400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets a little bit more of that, it's a four-run mm-hmm. inning. But right now, I mean, the Diamondbacks' offense, yes, you're right. They're putting up big numbers mm-hmm. in certain games. But if you go back and look at those games even,
mm-hmm.
their offense is almost solely consisting of big innings, which you'll take. But when they don't get a big inning, they don't score many runs at
no.
all. Torey Lovello, after the game, was asked if anything could have been different with the offense today.
Yeah, you know, situational hitting is very difficult. So hardest part of being a good hitter. And there's no magic solution that's going to just say this is always going to work. You have to be adaptable. You got to make adjustments with how you're feeling, what the pitch selection is, where the pitches are ending up, what's your strengths. There's 1,000 things that goes through your mind, but I just think a middle of the field approach, an all field approach, letting the ball travel and the ball get deep is probably the best starting point. And, you know, it just didn't happen today.
Yeah, and he said he's not trying to make excuses for the poor offense.
Not trying to make excuses.
Told you said that.
I think they felt like they got away with something in that first inning. We walked away with only one run as quality as our bats were. So it happens. We just didn't readjust, and we ended up scoring one run on a day. And that's, you know, that's not a recipe for a lot of wins.
Yeah, they hit into three double plays, 22 on the year in mm-hmm. double plays, fifth most in baseball. So there's some good offensively. There's some bad offensively, some concerning offensively. You mentioned Corbin Carroll's tough day in the seven hole against a right-handed hitter. He struggled against right-handers. It's almost inexplicable at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If there's pluses, Jordan Montgomery pitched seven innings. I mean, you'll take that in his second start.
Pretty good. Defense wasn't great behind him.
No, it was not great behind him again. But you were talking yesterday when we had the discussion about injuries and spin rate and super velocity pitchers. Jordan Montgomery is so old school, man.
Oh, he is.
He is a classic left-handed
nibbler,
pitcher.
Corners, yeah, totally.
79-mile-an-hour curveballs.
Uh-huh.
Here was Lovello on Montgomery's outing.
He's cruising. He did a great job. And the pitch count was low. I thought he was controlling counts. They just dug out a couple balls at the bottom of the zone. I think there was a walk that got him into trouble. And, you know, you're going up against Arenado and Goldschmidt. They know how to make adjustments. I didn't think Arenado had the big base hit to tie the score. But Monty did his job. He did a fantastic job. I just think offensively we're a little fatigued. I think this team is tired. I think the off day tomorrow in Seattle is going to be a nice thing for this ball club. But I think we got to just do better offensively. That was the bottom line today.
Yeah. The other plus was it's been one day since the Arizona Diamondbacks had to put anybody on the injured list. Doesn't it seem like?
Yeah.
There was run of two straight weeks every day we were talking about somebody else going on the IL. Yeah.
Did the Diamondbacks put another member on the injured list? No. All right. Woo. Progress.
Yeah, 12-14 as they head back to the West Coast to take on Seattle starting tomorrow night. And you heard Torey say it, maybe a day off in Seattle. You know what? Go to the market, throw some fish
around.
Throw
some fish around.
Get your mind off baseball.
Go to the Space Needle.
Yeah.
Go stalk Lane Staley. Oh, wait, because that he's passed.
Go grab some coffee.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Museum. That's pretty cool.
There you go. Go find that wall of bubble gum.
No, don't do that.
Is that Seattle or Portland?
That was Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle has it.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Gross.
It is disgusting.
The Mariner series starts tomorrow night. Coming up next, ASU appeared to be on the doorstep of actually hiring an athletic director, but we'll tell you about the butt next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Michael Crow's whole approach to athletics has changed significantly in the last year or two. Previously, he never would have hired or allowed Kenny Dillingham to be hired. He's a guy who looks at resumes, prestige, and he wanted name recognition nationally. And that all kind of went away with his understanding and how it evolved of college athletics in this rapidly evolving era, the NIL piece being such an important part of it, connecting with young players, the transfer portal, all of these things. And so I think that he's more likely to end up with somebody who's younger and maybe not somebody who's been a Power 5 athletic director, which would have been his prior move.
That's Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source. That was November 13th of last year.
Okay.
When Ray Anderson stepped down. He was on with Wolf and Luke here on Arizona Sports and kind of speculating on who it would be. I don't think anybody thought it would be 164 days later we'd still be talking about this, but here we are.
Mm-hmm.
The last part of what Chris Cartman said there, a younger candidate who maybe hasn't been a Power 5 athletic department head before, certainly is in the news right now because it was reported yesterday that Michael Crow was about to present Graham Rossini, who was part of the athletic department at ASU internally, has been since 2021. He was going to be presented to the Board of Regents as his choice. That got out. Then the reaction from some donors, some blowback. It's like, look, our athletic department is in shambles right now, and this is the hire you're going to make from internal.
Yeah.
We believe we need a fresh perspective and an outside set of eyes to fix this thing.
Yes.
So here we are, and now, as Chris Cartman reported yesterday, Rossini's candidacy is very much in peril.
What you don't want in theory is the anonymous promoted youngerish person who's indebted to the school president and thereby becomes, you know, an extension. I totally agree with you. There's a couple things about this story that kind of jumped out at me. And that is this. When you look at how Michael Crow has treated Ray Anderson, and you look at the way how he has treated Herm Edwards, and the way that he has kept them very, very well paid in the light of this scandal, And the fact that neither one of those men have had to wear it until this NCAA penalty came down, it reminds me very much of when Michael Bidwill gave 5-year contracts to Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury, as in, how out of touch are you with your fan base?
Mm-hmm.
How out of touch can you be with the way people perceive your program and the way you perceive the program? And maybe in this situation, the similarities go deeper. Maybe it's the comfort level. Maybe it's who knows what it is. I've said this before. I wonder. Michael Crow is not the owner of Arizona State University. He's the president.
Yes.
He's done incredible work at expanding the footprint and improving the academic reputation of that entire university. But at what point in time does he have to be accountable for this? Because if you're a university that is fallen down in terms of athletics because of money, and you're rewarding people who put you in that situation, where are your priorities?
There's other questions. I mean, that's the big burning question. That's at the top of the list that people want answers to. There's other questions, though. Like, if you were going to arrive at the conclusion that you wanted to elevate an internal choice, why the hell did it take 164 days to do it?
Right.
And let's go back to Ray Anderson stepping down. Ray Anderson still on campus as a professor in the law school.
Mm-hmm.
Was top 3 in the United States in terms of compensation paid to an athletic director. You want this turned around? That's where the search starts.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to pay very handsomely for the next athletic director. Ray Anderson was certainly not top 3 in performance as an athletic director.
No.
We know that. But this should be an attractive job. And I'm not sitting here besmirching Graham Rossini as a candidate. And you know, Chris Cartman made this very clear in his reporting, too. The blowback was not about him.
Mm-hmm.
The blowback was about the fact that
we don't trust you.
An internal candidate.
Yes, right.
Yes. And yeah. Are you going to be a Michael Crow puppet?
Yeah, that's yes, exactly. So that it's going to be interesting where this goes with this, because I don't know about the Arizona Board of Regents and how many questions they want answered.
It's yeah. There, I mean,
listen. This is a moment of reckoning for this whole athletic department. You take a look at where they are at now. The state of their baseball program, the state of their basketball program, the state of their football program. Where it's all going? How it's going to be funded? Are they going to be relevant? Are they relegated to 11th place? Are they ready for the Big 12? These are questions you've either got to look this in the face, or this is exactly where you're going to stay.
The other question that's rattling around my head as I'm trying to look at this from all angles is, how much say should this donor base actually have? How much attention do you pay to the blowback from donors who, by the way, are famously lagging behind their competition mm-hmm. in funding this athletic program? That's the name of the game right mm-hmm. now, is it not?
It is. It is. And I thought a big step was made in the Kenny Dillingham hire, because those boosters, they approve of Kenny Dillingham. So at least you've got a box check there. But again, I think this idea that we're just going to let Herm and Ray skate away from this. Michael Crow in February of 2022 went on the record as saying, as gushing in his praise of Herm Edwards, and saying that, look, Herm didn't ask these people to cheat. We had people who went rogue. Herm didn't ask them to do that. Well, I'm sorry. When you have a head coach and an athletic director over a scandal that just basically wipes out your football program and sends a Heisman Trophy winner to Baton Rouge, then why do you feel compelled to pay these men? What is the purpose of that? And couldn't that money be used in much more productive ways?
Oh, I know the answer to that question.
Right.
That is yes.
And so if everybody knows the answer to that question, what does that tell you about his priorities? That's where I'm hung up. That's why I think Michael Crow's got to address this.
Well, we'll see what this blowback means, if Michael Crow sticks to his guns, makes this hire, or if this surge goes even further. How long did it take Arizona to fill its spot when Dave Hickey left his post?
Less than 2 weeks,
10 minutes?
something like that. Yeah, it was definitely less than 3 weeks. Look, I think it was closer to two.
And when you're handing off like that, there's never a seamless transition, but when that gap between resignation and hire is that close together, it's a lot closer to seamless than what's going on here.
And plus, everybody thought there was one reason why it was taking so long, because they were waiting
for
the Olympics.
Waiting for a specific candidate, yeah. Yes.
And here's the other fact. This is a fact, and it's a very inconvenient truth for ASU fans. The gap between relevance, the gap in bragging rights, has never been wider in Arizona's favor.
I agree with that, and I'm only going back to, you know, my knowledge base of it, which is 1978, and that's when both schools entered the Pac-10 at that time. I don't disagree with you at all.
When you look at the combination of football and basketball programs mm-hmm. and where they are at respectively, the bragging rights for Arizona never been wider. And that hurts. That's the kind of stuff that bothers boosters.
Absolutely. Yeah. That should bother boosters.
If you want to say the top four sports, college football, basketball, women's college basketball, and baseball,
uh-huh.
it's a huge gap between all four of those sports right now.
Absolutely.
It was a month. Dave Hickey was let go on January 22nd. His last day was February 1st. Desiree Reed-Francois was introduced February 20th.
So, like, but his last day in
19 days, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, Desiree Reed-Francois.
Go all in with the Suns playoffs with Arizona Sports. Tune in during the 8 o'clock hour today, the noon hour, and the 3 o'clock hour to snag our exclusive Phoenix Suns code word. When you hear that word, Text it to 620-620 for your shot at scoring Suns playoff tickets. Do not miss your chance. Tune in today again during the 8, noon, and 3 o'clock hours for your chance to win. Coming up next, we'll get into some Suns playoff talk. Trying to stay alive against the Minnesota Timberwolves starting tomorrow night. And the national perspective is not painting a bright picture. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.